Welcome to the Monitor Daily Podcast. It's Thursday, May 12th. Thanks for joining us. I'm Mark Sappenfield.
And I'm Kendra Nordine Beato.
After vanquishing a 26-year insurgency in 2009, Mahinda Rajapaksa turned to a sadly familiar playbook. Since then, the military leader turned prime minister of Sri Lanka has ratcheted up ethnic and religious politics. The government has stoked fears of Muslims, adding to decades-long efforts to limit the influence of Tamil Hindus, the country's largest minority. This week, Mr. Rajapaksa resigned amid widespread protests. Once seen as a national hero, Mr. Rajapaksa's list of missteps is long, starting with mismanagement of the economy and stocking the government with his relatives. The country faces a debt crisis, food shortages, 13-hour-a-day power outages, high inflation, and the dramatic decline of its currency. The lesson is clear. Ardent ethno-religious nationalism is not a substitute for sound policy and prudent governance, writes Harim Paris, a former Sri Lankan political advisor in The Statesman. Yesterday's Monitor editorial pointed to a country that took a very different path out from an insurgency. Colombia offered former insurgents amnesty for laying down their arms. A former insurgent served two terms as mayor of Bogota and is now on the verge of becoming prime minister. The solidarity shown by all Sri Lankans in the current protests offers a glimpse of how the country could find its own way forward. Sri Lanka expert Sharika Tiranagama told the Washington Post, "This is what a democratic mobilization can look like. It's people demanding accountability for corruption, demanding basic rights to dignity." Now, today's stories. Our first story, Pennsylvania Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman's unconventional style and story has made him the heavy favorite for that state's Democratic Senate nomination and a test of whether progressivism can broaden its appeal if it comes in different packaging.
Pennsylvania's open Senate seat offers one of the few potential pickup opportunities for Democrats in a midterm cycle that is otherwise shaping up as a difficult one for the party. Ahead of the May 17th primary, Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman has effortlessly cruised to a nearly 40-point lead over his Democratic rivals. A rare combination of mostly left-leaning policy stances with a style that's more WWE than Ivy League, although he holds a graduate degree from Harvard, the 6'8" Mr. Fetterman presents the tantalizing possibility of a Democrat who can win over not just urban and suburban dwellers, but also the white working class voters who constitute a significant share of Pennsylvania's electorate. Many of those voters have been fleeing the Democratic Party in droves. President Joe Biden, for all his talk of Scranton roots, didn't perform significantly better than Hillary Clinton did in most of Pennsylvania's rural counties. But Mr. Fetterman's fans think if anyone can reverse that trend, it's him. He dresses like a biker, he's built like a steelworker, and he has a Harvard education, says Jerry Green, president of United Steelworkers of America Local 2599. I mean, we got it all in this one guy. This story was reported by Story Hinckley in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, for The Monitor.
Chile's voters elected a young leftist president to shake up its conservative power structure. But his turbulent start shows the difficulty of finding a middle ground in Chile and in the region.
Chile's bearded and tattooed young president, a former student activist named Gabriel Boric, rode into office in March on the crest of landslide elections that seemed to confirm Chileans' hunger for change. His election followed a strong yes vote in an October 2020 referendum on whether to replace the military dictatorship-era constitution. But sky-high expectations and impatience for deep and rapid change from one side of Chile's political spectrum are only half of Mr. Boric's problem. On the other side, he faces a skeptical conservative population, from business elites to middle-class families, shaken by the prospect of significant economic and social change imposed by the left. That split leaves the youthful Mr. Boric walking a perilous tightrope, one reason for what is seen as the steepest plunge in popularity by a new president in modern Chilean politics. Boric represents the yearnings for a new, younger, more inclusive, and widely representative Chile, says Juan Cristobal Cantu Arias, a young lawyer who counts himself among realists on the left. Boric is profoundly socialist, he says, but he also recognizes that not all Chileans agree with that. So he's governing from a more pragmatic position that won't force fast changes the country may not be ready for. This story was reported by Howard LaFranchi in Santiago, Chile, for The Monitor.
Continuing a Monitor tradition, the outgoing White House press secretary, in this case, Jen Psaki, stops by for breakfast and a few thoughts on what it's like to be in politics at this moment.
What's been the hardest part personally for Jen Psaki during her 16-month stint as White House press secretary? The threat she receives, she says. I have had nasty letters, text to me with my personal address, the names of my children. It crosses lines, you know, and that's when it becomes a little scary. Friday is her last day on the job, but today she spoke with reporters at a breakfast hosted by the Christian Science Monitor. Topics range from a moment in the briefing room she wishes she could do over to how her children help her do her job. While talking about that do-over moment, a time in December when she snapped at a reporter, the high standard she set for herself as press secretary becomes clear. I think it was by about the 9th or 10th version of the question that I think I just hit my limit, she says. But it is your job to control that urge and to always provide information, context, all the details, even if people in the room sometimes look like their eyes may roll back in their head because they're kind of bored of the same question. And that was a good lesson for me. This story was reported by Linda Feldman in Washington for The Monitor.
Witty and self-deprecating, the book, nasty, brutish, and short, explores the wonder that young kids bring to their efforts to make sense of the world and what grown-ups can learn from it.
I wonder if I'm dreaming my entire life, 4-year-old Hank tells his father, Scott Hershowitz, professor of law and philosophy. Such deep and sometimes humorous conversations with his two sons form the basis of Hershowitz's delightful book, Nasty, Brutish, and Short, Adventures in Philosophy with My Kids. The title is borrowed from 17th century philosopher Thomas Hobbes's description of what life would be like in a state of nature. It's a tongue-in-cheek characterization of the author's children. Hershowitz takes his son's ideas seriously, letting them do most of the talking. I never pull rank on my kids, he says. I won't tell them what to think about a question, even if I tell them what I think about it. I'd rather they work their ways toward views of their own. He also addresses common parenting challenges. When son Rex refuses to put on his shoes, deploying, "You're not the boss of me," Hershowitz follows with an examination of that claim, exploring the philosophical differences between power and authority. But like many parents, he eventually shuts down the endless back and forth with, "Because I said so," a phrase he thoroughly parses. Nasty, Brutish, and Short was reviewed by Barbara Spindell for The Monitor.
Now commentary from The Monitor's editorial board on Finland's choice to join NATO. Russia's invasion of Ukraine has forced many countries to rethink the meaning of security, and none more so than Finland. Once a model of neutrality, It announced Thursday that it would apply to join NATO. Sweden is expected to follow suit. Both Nordic nations, of course, would be defended by the military alliance. Yet both see joining NATO as less a slap at Russia and more as an invitation for aggressive powers not to see the world as a chessboard, one of only winners and losers in competition and conflict. For Finland, joining NATO increases our security, and we do not take it away from anybody, said Finnish President Sauli Niinistö. It is not a zero-sum game. The alliance allows in only countries dedicated to democratic values. NATO's values and its defensive posture pose no threat to anyone, he says. While the individual militaries of NATO's members are well-armed, it is the transcendent democratic values that bind the alliance and attract more applicants. The invasion of Ukraine pushed Finland and Sweden to seek shelter under NATO's wing, but not at the expense of Russia. That's a wrap for the news. You can find the full-length versions of these stories in today's issue or at csmonitor.com/daily. And for more Monitor audio, including our serial podcasts, you can go to csmonitor.com/podcasts. Thank you for joining us today. Please come back tomorrow when Taylor Luck looks at one of America's efforts to alleviate the Ukraine-induced oil crunch. U.S. officials are crisscrossing Libya to get oil production back online, but Libyans are wary of Washington motives. Today's Christian Science Spiritual Perspective contributor writes that if we're feeling discouraged or unable to do what's needed, we can turn to the divine principle, God, for inspiration and strength. As a woman experienced when she realized her ability to take tangible steps of progress following the passing of her husband. You can find the column in today's issue or at csmonitor.com/daily. We want to give a quick thanks to our staff, including today's audio production team, Jeff Turton and Alexander Thompson.
This podcast is produced by the Christian Science Monitor. Copyright 2022.